You're listening to another.
Happy Friday, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Cutler Hour. I am your host, Michael Cutler. Friday, March 13th, Friday the 13th, 2015. Thank you so much for joining me. It's always great joining you at the end of the week to play that infamous game of catch-up. Always, never a shortage of stuff that we need to catch up about, especially where our government is concerned. So many issues, so much going on. And so much of it having a real impact on so many Americans' lives, but yet incredibly, not too many people really understand the true nature of the beast, and that's what this program is all about. Those of you familiar with me know that I'm a retired senior special agent with the former Immigration and Naturalization Service, and ever since the attacks of 9/11, the terrorist attacks that took 3,000 lives way back then, I have been determined to wake up our fellow Americans, wake up our leaders, that this issue of immigration is at the heart of so many of the vulnerabilities that we face. Not about keeping everybody out, certainly not. I know the open borders crowd, I've called them the immigration anarchists. Perhaps they're just plain anarchists altogether, quick to make accusations. But the reality is that homeowners have peepholes and door locks and doorbells so that when a stranger shows up, it's expected that the stranger will knock on the door and that the owner of the home will have to give consent before that person can enter. Countries are no different. Nations have every right to defend themselves, and their defense begins at the border. In fact, I've often referred to our borders and our immigration laws as America's first and last line of defense, not just against terrorists, but against criminals, against people whose presence in the United States would be harmful. It's nothing unreasonable about the position. The other side knows that there is nothing unreasonable about that position. So all they seem to think they can do is demonize and make false accusations. And it's time that we, the people, Americans, irrespective of political party, this isn't about left or right, it's about right or wrong, we need to stand up and say this is enough. We need to be able to defend ourselves. We have become a nation of wusses, people who have no guts, no chutzpah, no spine, no cojones. I don't care what word you want to use. We just don't seem to have that spirit that says we will defend ourselves. I'm a nice guy, just don't mess with me. Don't attack me, don't hurt me, don't hurt my family, don't hurt my country. If you want to take me on, then so be it, let's go do it. And if we're going to get to that point, then we do it the right way and we do it to win. But that's all this is about. It's about Americans standing up for America. And Americans are the most diverse group of people on the planet. If you want to talk about race, religion, ethnicity, origins, America is the most diverse. This isn't about race. It's not about religion. It's simply about being American. You know, we say a pledge of allegiance to the American flag. It's time that the politicians of this nation paid allegiance to the citizens of our nation. And this is my message. It's consistent, doesn't go anywhere. I'm not going anywhere because I am determined to get more and more of our own people to wake up and understand that we are destroying the middle class, that we are permitting narcotics into our country, and along with it comes violent crimes and the loss of life, that we are making it increasingly impossible for the United States to take on that leadership role in the world that it must have. And let's face it, if America falls from its position of preeminence, it's not as though France, Germany, Canada, or England are waiting in the wings. I could deal with that. It's that if America falters, waiting in the wings are China, Russia, and Iran. What could possibly go wrong? And that's why we need to stand up to the nonsense that's being foisted on us by our own elected representatives. And we have lots of material to cover today, but I just wanted to start out by reminding you what my mission is, hosting this program and doing all those things that I've done ever since those terrorist attacks that took place, almost 14 years ago. So that's what the program is about. We have a lot of news reports that really show where things are and where they need to be. And as I always like to do, I want to remind all of you to go visit some websites. I'm very proud to talk about my own website, obviously, first and foremost, Michael Cutler, C-U-T-L-E-R, michaelcutler.net. Also, for many years now, I have been a senior fellow with a terrific organization headquartered out in Santa Barbara, California, Californians for Population Stabilization. CAPSWeb.org is their website, C-A-P-S, CAPSWeb. They look at the immigration issue from the perspective of the environment, from the perspective of the economics. I am one of many people who write for them. We all bring to the table our areas of expertise, mine, of course, being immigration, national security, border security, effective enforcement, and so forth. We have environmentalists on board, educators, a whole bunch of folks truly motivated to get the word out in ways that the mainstream media, I won't even say is reluctant to do, won't do. Also, I am a columnist, very proud to be a columnist for a wonderful organization, the David Horowitz Freedom Center. Their publication is Front Page Magazine, very conservative organization. Balancing Front Page, and I recently was with David Horowitz and his organization in West Palm Beach, Florida. Really great opportunity to be there. I was on a panel with one of my few heroes in Washington, Senator Jeff Sessions. Congressman Louis Gohmert, another real good guy, joined us. Congressman John Fleming. I met Congressman John Bridenstine. Good people, great event. And Front Page Magazine has many, many of my articles. I write for them quite frequently. I will have a new article coming out, I believe, on Monday, and we'll talk a little bit about what that article is going to cover. So please, now we have michaelcutler.net, capsweb.org, and you really need to go to capsweb.org. Front Page Magazine, Progressives for Immigration Reform, is supposed to have one of my articles coming out, I think, on Tuesday. So, and they are to the left. As the name implies, they are progressives. Again, not about left or right, but about right or wrong. I also have an article in this quarterly edition of The Social Contract. And then, of course, The Daily Caller has a couple of my articles up, website founded by Tucker Carlson. So, you know, this is about providing the information that is very difficult to come by unless you go to specific places. You know, there was a time right after 9/11 when I would not, it was not uncommon for me to perhaps do a dozen or more television interviews in a month. I'd be going back and forth between MSNBC, CNN, Fox News, and back again, ABC News, and so forth. They're gone. Fox News does have me on occasionally. A couple of weeks ago, Fox and Friends Weekend Edition, Anna Koyman, delightful young lady, interviewed me. Wonderful to be on the set with her. We got to actually talk about the nexus between immigration and the 9/11 commission, something that I'm adamant about. But believe me, you're not going to hear that at CNN or MSNBC. Missing in action. I also am very proud that I'm frequently a guest on some upstart networks who are trying to fill the void, recognizing that the mainstream media is missing in action. And that, of course, is Newsmax TV. I'm a frequent guest with J.D. Hayworth. J.D. is a former member of Congress. In fact, about 6 weeks after 9/11, I went down to Washington, testified before the Immigration Reform Caucus. J.D. was a congressman at the time, and he was one of many congressmen who were in attendance at that hearing. So it's delightful for me to be able to join him on his news program on Newsmax TV, and he does a really great job. And One American News Network, I've been on with the Daily Ledger and other programs on both of those networks. It's about trying to get information out there at a time when, because of money and greed and ideology, it's increasingly difficult to have an honest conversation about immigration. But I got to tell you, folks, it's a conversation we absolutely must have. This isn't about xenophobia. It's not about a dislike of Latinos. You know, I really get very torqued. We keep hearing this business about the Latino vote, and I've probably talked about this too many times, but you can't talk about it enough. You cannot talk about the issue of the Latino voter enough. And if you're wondering where I'm going with this, let me explain it to you. We've become very sensitive to racial profiling. You see what's happening in Ferguson, and that's a whole story all by itself, the accusations of the administration and all that's happened there. All about, you know, profiling and treating people unfairly. The administration has done tremendous harm, I believe, to the law enforcement community, the men and women of law enforcement on the local, city, state, federal level. Law enforcement is a tough, dangerous job. I would put it up there with being in the U.S. military. I carried a gun and a badge for 3 decades. I've lost friends along the way. You know, dead is dead. Whether you take a bullet in Baghdad or take a bullet in the Bronx, either way, you know, the outcome is the same. And the folks in law enforcement are that thin blue line that separate, you know, the decent folks from the criminals and the wacky people, the violent folks, the ones who put everyone's lives in jeopardy. And, you know, there may be some bad guys along the way. Every profession has its winners, you know. But if you look at law enforcement officers as a group of people, I've never met a greater bunch of Americans than the folks that I've met when I was an agent, whether it was police officers, whether it was federal agents from other agencies, law enforcement people from other countries. I've worked with law enforcement officials from the Canadian government, the British government. I have a special place in my heart for the Israelis, the Israeli National Police. I worked with them for almost a quarter of a century. I worked with the Japanese police. And police are police. They're the ones who put themselves in harm's way. Somebody once described a law enforcement officer as that person who would run towards that which any sane person would run from. So to see what is happening now is very disturbing. But what's so remarkable is that the reporters who might be quick to jump on the Obama bandwagon and criticize men and women who carry that badge and gun are just as quick to talk about the Latino voter. And I want everybody to just stop and give some thought to what I'm about to say. There is a legitimate place in law enforcement for profiling. Now, what do I mean by that? What I mean is if you look at a situation where a police officer is out on the street or a federal agent, you look for those things that are out of place. You know, I compare it to going to the supermarket and finding a can of soup in the refrigerator chest in the supermarket. And you say, gee whiz, why would someone put a can of soup in the freezer chest when it should be out on the shelf somewhere? Something is out of place. If, for example, I was up in some of the tougher neighborhoods of New York City, the South Bronx, Harlem, East New York, and you saw a kid in a predominantly white, preponderance of people are black, and this kid is white, and he's driving a fancy car, and it's 3 o'clock in the morning, and the car has out-of-town plates, and you're on a block where we've made numerous drug buys, you have to wonder why this kid is there at 3 in the morning in a fancy car with, let's say, New Jersey or Connecticut tags. Doesn't mean he's a bad guy, but he certainly needs to be approached. He should be spoken with. It should be a very civil encounter. But I believe that police officers seeing this happening are remiss if they don't go up to this young man and say, you know, let me see a license, registration, and so forth. Who are you visiting? Who do you know on the block? Why are you here? Maybe there's a legitimate reason. Maybe he has a friend who happens to live on the block, and that's fine. Then he goes on his merry way. But certainly you need to talk to him and find out why he's there at that hour on that block when we know that there's been criminal activity. Because there are certain blocks, and you begin to identify them in various communities where you know that there's criminal activity on particular blocks. I can certainly speak to a whole bunch of communities that I became aware of that sort of activities here in New York, whether it was in Brooklyn, whether it was Manhattan. You knew there were certain areas, certain little pockets where drug trafficking, prostitution, gambling houses, whatever it was, you knew that there were things happening in that community. And if somebody showed up and didn't seem to fit into that community, you needed to talk to him. That's not being bigoted. That's being proactive, and it's fair and reasonable. And those searches and those questions and whatever flows from it, they hold up in court because judges generally, unless you have a wacky judge, understand that that's just the nature of the beast. But you can hear so many reporters jump up and down, oh my God, the police engaged in profiling, and then they start to talk about the Latino vote. Now, think of all the factors that might go into my making a decision when I was an agent to engage somebody in a conversation. He was of different race than the community, the hour of the day, the out-of-town plates, the fancy car in a poverty-stricken neighborhood. It all kind of comes together. You know, some guy doesn't normally drive a $70,000 car in a neighborhood where most of the people are on welfare unless something is wrong. Maybe. So you check out and you say, well, okay, why is he here? And you're looking at a whole bunch of factors, situational stuff, behavioral stuff. In fact, the Israelis are very good at behavioral profiling when they allow people on airplanes. They don't do racial profiling. They do what they call behavioral profiling. Does the guy seem nervous? Does he not make eye contact? There's a whole bunch of stuff that you look for. But when you talk about the Latino voter, what you're really saying, folks, is that if someone's last name is Rodriguez or Garcia or Ramirez, I don't need to know anything more about you. I know everything I need to know because you're a Latino, and Latinos vote the same way because all Latinos have the same values. All Latinos have the same aspirations. It's crazy. I feel the same way about the Jewish voter, the black voter. I mean, really? Because someone has black skin, that's all you need to know about that person? Because someone like myself is wearing a Jewish star? Well, he's got a Star David on. We know who he is. We know what those people are about. But that's what they're saying. And you hear it time and time and time again. Sunday isn't far away. Turn the channel on to one of those talking head news programs on Sunday. I am willing to bet you that you will hear at least a couple of those talking heads sitting on the throne of the TV set, the studio, talking about the Latino voter and how this congressman or that congressman is trying to appeal to the Latino voter. Now, there's so much damage, so much harm being done because of this insanity, this stupidity, the bigotry, if you will, of those talking heads. First of all, if you ask somebody, what's the most likely ethnicity of an illegal alien? There'll be no hesitancy. Oh, Latinos. Where are they from? Probably Mexico. Why? Because all we hear about are the Latino voter, and we first have to secure the Mexican border. That's all we hear about. You hear about it from Ted Cruz, who happens to be a Latino, Cuban ancestry from what I understand. But immediately, we're going to secure the Mexican border. Really? And when you ask people, how many border states are there? Oh, there's New England, goodness. There's New Mexico, there's Texas, there's California, there's Arizona. Well, those are the four. Have a nice day. And those of you who've listened to my program before know that there are 50 border states. Any state with an international airport or a seaport or lies along the northern or southern borders are all border states. So how in the world do politicians with a straight face say, well, what we've got to do is secure that border, and then we can deal with the people who are here? What does that even mean, secure that border? Does that mean we're going to shut down all the international airports, or we don't care if people come here from other countries as long as they don't come from Mexico or Latin America? I don't understand the point that keeps on repeating, we're going to secure the border. Does that mean we don't care if people come here from Canada? Does it mean we don't care if people come here and stow away on ships or violate the terms of their admission into the United States? You know, it's estimated, and no one really knows, and I don't even know how they come up with the figures, but I know I've done congressional hearings about it. It's estimated that 40% of the illegal aliens did not run the U.S.-Mexican border. So we're talking about how many people now? But yet all we ever hear about is we're going to secure the Mexican border first. Why don't we care about stowaways? Why don't we care about people coming across the Canadian border? We've had terrorists come across the Canadian border. Why don't we care about people who commit visa fraud? Because every one of the terrorists who entered the United States violated either the terms of their admission or lied on their visa application or concealed material facts. Has anybody ever said anything about that? No, we're going to secure the border, and then we're going to give millions of people lawful status in the United States. What in the world are they talking about? Why in the world are they ignoring what should be obvious and creating a mythology that all too many Americans are willing to accept at face value without questioning anything? We're going to secure the Mexican border, and we're going to move on. So we don't care if people overstay. We don't care if people lie on their visas, even when the 9/11 Commission warned about that. It's an absurdity. And so now we've got most people bamboozled into believing that anybody whose last name sounds Latino is probably an illegal alien. And that's disgusting. It's hurtful. I mean, imagine, you know, I'm first-generation American. My mom came here from Poland ahead of the Holocaust. I was named for my grandmother who died in the Holocaust. Imagine some guy whose last name is Rodriguez or Garcia or Gutierrez. Maybe he's fifth-generation American. Maybe he just came back from two tours in Afghanistan and saw some of his best friends get blown up. Maybe he was wounded. Maybe his grandpa gave his life on D-Day on the beaches of Normandy. But because his last name is Rodriguez, everyone's going to look askance at him and say, I wonder where he's from. This is the damage, folks, that's being done by the stupidity about talking about the Latino voter. It's outrageous. It's absolutely outrageous, and it has to stop. And we keep hearing the same arguments. You know, I was just reading an article in the Dallas Morning News about Sarah Saldana. Sarah Saldana is the new director of ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement. And immediately she said, the president is a pragmatist. We can't deport 11 million illegal aliens. That's all we keep hearing from both political parties. We can't deport 11 million. So what does that mean? First of all, we probably have 35 or 40 million by now. I don't believe that 11 million figure, not for a human heartbeat. But so what does that mean? We throw up our hands and say, well, because there's so many here, let's not bother enforcing the law. And that's why they give us this idiotic scheme. Well, first we'll secure the Mexican border. Why don't they simply say, first we'll wash all the Border Patrol cars? The hell with it. Don't bother securing them. First we'll get the Border Patrol cars nice and shiny. And then, you know, first we'll go out and have ice cream. I mean, that's what they may as well say. All you do is secure the Mexican border, the problem doesn't get solved. The problem does not get solved. America's national security does not get addressed. The issue of Americans losing their jobs to foreign workers or American wages being suppressed does not get solved. So why bother saying we're going to secure the Mexican border? Why not say we'll go out for pizza and a movie, and then we'll give everybody lawful status? Because for all the good it would do the system, that's what they're talking about. Now, I don't want somebody misquoting me and say, well, Mike Cutler said we don't need to worry about the Mexican border. That's not what I'm saying. I compare the Mexican border and the issue of security on the Mexican border to a wing on an airplane. An airplane without a wing won't fly, but a wing by itself goes nowhere. So should we secure the Mexican border? Of course we should. But then do we just, you know, take a hot shower and say, mission accomplished, I'm going to put on my nice clothes and go out to dinner because we've secured the Mexican border? Or do we look at this as a system with many dysfunctional and failed components and say, okay, let's address all the other components? I think the answer to my question should be self-evident. So now let's dig into some news here. You know, sometimes I wonder at coincidences. But there was a news release that was issued by Customs Enforcement, Immigration and Customs Enforcement. And this was on March 9th. And one of the things I do, and I just wrote a piece for Front Page Magazine, I have been told it will probably be up on Monday, so go to Front Page. But on March the 9th, just a couple days ago, ICE issued a press release, and the title was 2,059 Convicted Criminals Arrested in Nationwide Operation. And so that was the operation they bragged about. It was called Operation Crosscheck. And they said that over a four-day period beginning on March 1st, 2005, and ending on March 5th, they arrested 2,059 criminal aliens from 94 countries, including Jamaica, Poland, Finland, and Mexico. Do you think that all 2,059 of those criminal aliens had entered the United States by running the Mexican border? Do you think the folks from Finland ran the Mexican border? Do you think the Poles or the Jamaicans ran the Mexican border? This is stupid beyond words. And it's not about Latinos, because this was 94 countries, according to the ICE news release. 94 countries. Are there 94 countries in Latin America, folks? If you look at the news release, this backs up the point that I have been hammering ad nauseum, that this is not about Latin America. This is not about Latinos. This has nothing to do with Mexico and everything to do with who is in our country who is not a citizen. And the term for somebody who's in our country and not a citizen is alien. But God forbid you should use the word alien, because, again, we have to create this kabuki theater where we mislead and confound our fellow Americans, because if they really understood the issue, they'd be screaming like crazy. So what do? They say, well, once we secure the Mexican border. So would that have kept out this criminal from Jamaica or Poland or Finland? Of course not. They talk about the border states. Now, here's something that's also remarkable. None of the people that they wrote about came from those so-called four border states. They were from Illinois. They made the arrests in Connecticut. Everywhere but. There was nothing in the press release that spoke about any one of the four border states that we keep hearing about. Again, how much more can we be misled? And as I was writing this article, and I was working on it last night, I got an email from two of my former colleagues. One guy, former associate commissioner for enforcement, worked out of headquarters. He's become a good friend of mine. Another guy, also a good friend, former senior special agent out of Detroit. And they both sent me the same article. It was kind of funny. They came in within a couple of minutes of each other. And the headline, this was a Yahoo News report. I guess they were sitting at their computer when this thing popped up on their screen. And the title was, 15 immigrants protected from deportation arrested in sweep. What sweep? The one that was reported on in the news release that by happenstance I was writing an article about. It was a stop the presses moment, and I said, well, I'm going to have to rewrite my article, because just as I saw their article, I had sent my original article to my editor over at Front Page Magazine, and I said, okay, Nicole, hold off. Don't do anything with this. I'm doing a rework. And I worked a couple of hours, really, at putting this together, because I wanted to get it right. And this is absolutely astonishing. It's absolutely astonishing. And you know, when people keep talking simply about Obama, both parties are the enemy of effective immigration law enforcement, the Republicans and the Democrats. I do an awful lot of radio programs. If you get a chance, 9:30 on Monday mornings, I'm on, that's New York time, East Coast time, I'm on the radio with Samantha Sorbo. She does such a great job. Very often I'm on with my friend Charles Butler and Bobby Gunther Walsh and a whole bunch of folks. And I'm constantly asked all kinds of questions. And I know that Sam is, you know, used to tell me that everything was all about the Democrats and the people leaning to the left. My friend Bobby Gunther Walsh, same thing. Oh, those Democrats. And I say, no. Wait a minute, guys. I'm registered as a Democrat. Let's stop beating up on fellow Americans because of political party affiliation. That's another problem that we have in America today, that we beat each other up. Oh, he's a Democrat. He's a Tea Partier. Come on, folks. We're better than that. This is America. We should be celebrating our differences. I kid you not. You may think I'm crazy, but we should be thrilled that we have fellow Americans who stand up and disagree with us. That's what America is about. It's a celebration of freedom of speech. Never, ever forget that expression. I disagree with what you say, but I will defend to the death your right to say it. That's vital. That's right in the First Amendment. You know, if you ask people about the First Amendment, they say freedom of press, freedom of speech, freedom of religion. And they kind of wipe their hands and say, I'm done. Not so quick. Because they left out two more. The right to seek redress of grievances. And when you look at the lunacy being foisted on us, not just in Washington, but from state capitals and city halls across the country, we have a lot to grieve. Let me tell you, we have a lot to grieve. And it's guaranteed that right to grieve is in our Constitution. First Amendment, right at the top. Most important is where you start the list. And the right peaceable assemblage, Why do you think having meetings is in the First Amendment? Because they wanted Americans to be able to sit down and have arguments, discussions, debates. All they said is, leave your guns, your clubs, and your knives out. Peaceable. Don't beat each other up physically. Beat each other up verbally. And that's right. That's the democratic tradition. It's the process. It's what we should celebrate. You live in a country that lives, or if you want to call it living, under a totalitarian regime. There are no debates. There are no debates with ISIS for those poor people being slaughtered, the Christians who've been beheaded. There's no debates in the Middle East. There's no disagreement. My way or the highway, and the highway for those poor people is being beheaded or being shot. So celebrate the fact that we disagree. We can disagree and still respect each other, and we should. And I don't give a damn what issue we're talking about. Abortion? Gay rights? I don't care. I don't care. Celebrate the fact that we can disagree in this country. See, by not honoring the people we disagree with, we wind up with an intellectual inbreeding. An intellectual inbreeding where people don't hear anything but the one message that they want to hear because everybody else is the enemy. It's terrible. I was on a program with a radio talk show host, was a John Bircher. And I started getting calls from people that I had worked with, and they said, what are you doing being on a John Bircher show? I said, well, first of all, I didn't know he was a John Bircher. This was all over the internet, the open borders anarchists, you know, immigration expert on John Bircher. I said, okay. And what did they claim I said on the program? Because the funniest thing was, I think my appearance was about 45 minutes. And it was a contentious 45. I was exhausted when it was over. Because we went at it, you know, from square one to square 20. It was a nonstop argument on almost every issue, just one or two things we agreed on, and after that it was off to the races. But you see, the open borders anarchists who put the information on the web knew damn well that I didn't say anything that I have a problem with. I didn't misspeak. I didn't say anything scandalous. I actually disagreed with this guy who I thought was way more conservative than what I was comfortable with, and I told him. Because I'm an American, folks, and I have that right to disagree. And I said to some of the people I work with, I said, what are you so upset about? What exactly did I say that was so repugnant? Well, gee, we don't know what you said, but it's on the web that you were on a John Birch radio show. I said, okay, and? Is there something illegal? Did I violate a law? Have we outlawed the John Birch Society in the United States? I don't like a lot of their positions, but has this been outlawed? Was this a program advocating for pedophiles, for God's sakes? Of course not. And I actually engaged in an argument. And you know what? Looking back at it, I'm thrilled that I was on that program because I'm willing to bet that that audience had never heard my perspective before. I am sure that his regular listeners heard his perspective, which is way, way, way to the right of my perspective. And suddenly, along comes this guy who doesn't march lockstep, and they wound up hearing something very different from what they're used to. And they may have rejected it. They might have turned the channel. But maybe it caused at least some of these folks who listened to do a little bit of thinking and soul-searching and reconsidering their position. And that's the beauty of debate. My degree was in communications. I was on the debating teams in high school and college. I've been debating since I was 14 years old. And I have to tell you, it's a wonderful activity to engage in. I don't think anybody should get a high school diploma or a college degree without at least a full year on the debating team. Learn how to stand on your own two feet. Learn how to ask the questions, not just spit them up on command. Mostly our educational system, and people say, oh, we're being indoctrinated. Well, education has always been about indoctrination. Has always been about indoctrination. You know, ask anybody who discovered America and when did it happen. Everybody jumps up and says, Columbus, 1492. Why? How do they know that? Because they've been indoctrinated. Is the information accurate? I don't know. There are some people who think that perhaps, you know, the Norse came down here and discovered America. You know, they don't know. But this is what we're taught, and this is how we're indoctrinated. They do the same thing with science. They do the same thing with medicine, with philosophy. Whatever the conventional wisdom, whatever that means, That's what's taught, and that's what you're expected to parrot when you take a test. It's indoctrination. The only place where you're taught to ask the questions generally, I think philosophy also, I hope, perhaps, somewhat. I took a couple of philosophy classes. But as a rule, it's on the debating team that you learn to ask the questions. And it's often been said that you can judge a person's intelligence more readily by the questions they ask than the answers that they give. So this is about questioning each other. And this is why it's so darn important to have the debate, to have the discourse. And so we've gotten into a point in America today, like we're two armed camps. You're either on the left or you're on the right. You're either with us or you're against us. You're either my friend or you're my enemy. We have to stop thinking that way, folks. This is hurting America. This is hurting our democracy, our republic. Because we're so busy fighting with each other, we're ignoring the nonsense, the shenanigans being pulled on us by people who purport to represent us. Because we're so busy fighting among ourselves, we're not paying attention to them, and we should. And I was on a number of programs, and in fact, Bobby Gunther Walsh said to me, Mike, how do you look at the two parties? And I said, well, I look at them the way I used to look at the Medellin and Cali drug cartels of Colombia. Two warring criminal organizations that will stop at nothing to control ever more turf. That's all they are. When you have a leader who calls himself or herself the whip, goodness, if that doesn't sound like a Tony Soprano enforcer, I don't know what does. Let's stop this nonsense about vilifying our fellow Americans we disagree with and start going after politicians who fail to live up to their oaths of office and fail to look out for the average American family. That's the danger. Not whether your neighbor agrees or disagrees with gay marriage or abortion or any of that other stuff. I know people feel strongly about it. But this is just window dressing. The real issue is when some politician can stand there and say it's in America's best interest to let 300,000 more high-tech workers into America, even as Americans are losing their jobs and losing their homes to foreclosure. What's the bigger danger? What impacts your life more immediately? When gang members enter the United States and peddle drugs on street corners and shootouts follow and innocent people get hit by those bullets, what's a bigger issue that day? The sale of drugs, the involvement of gangs, or whether or not there's school prayer? I know you may feel strongly about some of the issues, but let's put it in perspective. Let's start trying to win over our fellow Americans. And I got to tell you, there's a lot of Tea Partiers who I think are, you know, out there also, and some who I agree with quite strongly, like any other group. You know, I have Democratic friends who say, oh, those Tea Party people are crazy. Let me tell you how crazy the Tea Party is. 3 years in a row, I went to Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Joe Dugan did a phenomenal job. He's not a young guy either. Joe has been around a long, long time. I don't know where in the world he gets the energy from, but he's like an Ever-Ready Rabbit, you know, the Ever-Ready Bunny. And they had me speak at the Tea Party convention in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, and they gave me prime time. The first year I spoke was during the presidential election season. Santorum spoke, Gingrich spoke, and then they invited me on stage for 25 minutes. I walked up onto the platform just as Newt Gingrich was stepping off of the platform. The room was packed to the rafters. And Joe knows that I'm registered as a Democrat. He also knows that I always vote as an American first. We should be celebrating an organization that's willing to have somebody speak who may not line up the way they do on politics, if they believe, though, that that person is something worth listening to. And Joe and the other folks there could not have been more courteous, more welcoming. That's the American tradition that I grew up with. Respecting each other, celebrating our differences, engaging in open debate, making our government accountable. So forgive me for the soapbox, but, you know, we've got to watch what we're doing. Because right now you have politicians that are not looking out for our best interests. And you know, it's so funny because when I saw this article about how 15 people had been given this deferred action business, protected from deportation by an administration that took authority it didn't have to, in essence, create laws without the benefit of legislation, I really went nuts. I wrote an article for Fox News Latino. This was back on June the 12th that the president made that speech from the Rose Garden. June 12th, I think it was, back in 2012, when he talked about the Dreamers, you know, prosecutorial discretion. 2 days after he made that speech, my article appeared on the Fox News Latino website. And I said that what the president referred to as prosecutorial discretion in reality was prosecutorial deception. And I want you to think about it. I know what happened back then, but we're living with it right now, and we just saw the results of it at this raid 2 days ago. Because this, you know, lawlessness is continuing and is permeating our country and putting American lives at risk. Putting American lives at risk needlessly, because this administration, more than others, but they've all been guilty of it, are willing to play politics with American lives and with national security. No less than that. No less than that. Prosecutorial discretion is a legitimate factor depending on how it's used. Let me give you an example of prosecutorial discretion. And we've all been there. You're driving down the highway, the sun is shining, traffic is light, you're minding your own business, and all of a sudden you see a radar unit. And your pulse jumps, you know, you feel that your heart pumping in your throat because you look down at the speedometer and, oh my God, I'm going 11 miles an hour over the speed limit. I'm going to get a ticket now. I'm certain of it. So, you know, you immediately slam on the brake, or maybe it's too late and you've gone through the radar and you see the cop standing there with the radar gun. And you look at your speedometer, the speed limit is 55 and you're doing 66 miles an hour or whatever. And you think, oh boy, there goes my wonderful day. And lo and behold, the cop doesn't chase you. And it takes you a couple of minutes to kind of settle back in your seat and you know, keep your eye on the speedometer. Maybe now you set the cruise control and you think, boy, that was close. That police officer was exercising prosecutorial discretion. He decided that you weren't posing a threat to anybody's safety. Your car appeared to be in decent condition. You weren't swerving all over the road. You were holding a steady lane, driving over the speed limit on a dry road with nobody around you. Why bother? And he also knows, or she also knows, that, you know, if history is any indication, within 10, 15 minutes, some fool will come through here going 80, and that one needs to be stopped. Or some guy will come by here with a broken headlight or whatever. That person is a risk to safety. So that's the one that we're going to pull over. So the police officer said, yes, that driver is going over the speed limit, but because I can't be everywhere and I want to be fair about this, maybe the person wasn't paying attention because the road is so wide open and the conditions are so nice today, I'm not going to bother that person. That's prosecutorial discretion. Or you go to the U.S. attorney and say, I want you to prosecute somebody for reentry after deportation. We had this quite frequently in the old days, especially. So the first thing was, well, how many times was he deported? Does he have a criminal history? They don't deport everybody. They don't prosecute everybody who's been previously deported and reenters illegally. Again, limited resources. You want the most serious cases prosecuted. So you do that by using your limited resources judiciously. It's legitimate. I have no problem with it. It makes perfect sense. But here is where the president, for lack of a better term, I try to be polite about this, was lying through his teeth. Okay, why don't we get to the cut to the chase? He was lying through his teeth, because it wasn't that he ignored he's ordering ICE agents to ignore people that don't have criminal histories. No, he says, bring them in and we will process them with resources we don't have. At that moment, folks, any talk about prosecutorial discretion went out the window. See, if he simply said, don't bring people in and process them unless you can verify that they either have criminal convictions or a clear nexus either to a criminal or terrorist organization, which is stupid, by the way, and I'll get to that in a moment. But unless that's the case, you're not talking about prosecutorial discretion, because they had to, in fact, hire thousands of people in anticipation of running a program that this judge thankfully stopped in Brownsville, Texas. So suddenly this whole notion of prosecutorial discretion has evaporated. It's gone away. Because the fact that they're hiring people to provide lawful status to people is not the same as ignoring them because of a lack of resources, which is what prosecutorial discretion is. He's creating a burden on a system that's overburdened. That's exactly the wrong reason, and the reason why it's a lie, that this is about prosecutorial discretion. And I wrote about it. And that's why I called it prosecutorial deception. He was deceiving people by claiming something that wasn't the case. It wasn't the case. If he said ignore them, I could see the argument of prosecutorial discretion. But when you start to say bring them in, and as it was before these cases were being adjudicated, Citizenship and Immigration Services was already dealing with over 6 million applications per year. They are stretched to the bone. They can't deal with their workload. And now you look at the fact that what they're doing with these people is endangering national security. There is no capacity to do face-to-face interviews with all these applications. There's no capacity to do field investigations. So we can't verify who they are or when they got here. And then the president said, well, this is about young people. Really? The age cutoff was 31, and now that's gone out the window because they've gone from DACA, Deferred Action Childhood Arrivals, to DAPA, which is the program that has been stopped, Deferred Action Parents of Americans or whatever. Well, wait a moment. These aren't children anymore, are they? And the DACA kids, so-called, all they had to do is say, oh, yeah, I came here before my 16th birthday. But they could be up to age 31 when they walked into the office. Well, if you're not going to do a field investigation, and if these are people who ran the border, entered the United States without inspection, that's properly the language we use, EWI, entry without inspection. If they entered without inspection, no record was created of their entry. It's not like you can run the fingerprint and they look at the system and they say, oh, yeah, Charlie Smith from Great Britain entered the United States 7 years ago at Kennedy International Airport on flight number so-and-so. All right, you know, I would still disagree with it, but I would say, okay, maybe. No, there is no way of doing that because when they ran the border, there was no record of their entry. Most illegal aliens use multiple false identities, which is why one of the fastest growing and biggest white-collar crime in America today is identity theft. So all they do, the aliens involved, know what the magic word is. You know, I do quite a bit of television. And very often the studio, in fact, not very often, generally, the studio sends a car to pick me up, bring me to the studio. And that way I don't have to deal with the traffic and I can, you know, clear my head out in the car and figure out where I want to take the discussion when I'm on camera. And I remember one day this gentleman was driving me, very nice guy, and we started to chat, and he told me that he had come here from Lebanon under the Reagan amnesty. And I said, oh, it must have been difficult, playing dumb on my part. And he said, well, I claimed I was a farmer. By the way, Chuck Schumer, one of the eight gangsters, as I've come to call him, was the architect of the agricultural amnesty provision of the Reagan amnesty, even though Chuck didn't have any farms in his district. At the time, Chuck was my congressman, but I can tell you it's safe to say he was never my representative. So I said to the guy, you were a farmer? He said, of course not. But everybody knew how stupid America was and how stupid the federal government was. All we had to do is say we worked on a farm, and we were in. So everybody from my village in Lebanon said that we had worked on farms, and we all got our green cards. He said, now I'm an American. Seemed like a nice guy, but my point is that really the way you want America to be regarded around the world, especially now that we're dealing with the threat of terrorism and ISIS saying we're going to come and we're going to blow up the White House and we're going to take down your government? So everybody knows that immigration is no longer an issue. They know our borders are a pushover, literally. This is dangerous, folks. This is about national security. So we hear this nonsense. Well, if they've been living here for all these years, and you see these folks on Fox News or all the other networks pontificating, well, if someone's been living here for the last 7 years, but they never have an immigration agent on or an adjudications officer, and I spent a year as an adjudications officer. I spent 26 years as an agent. I spent a number of years in the fraud unit looking for the people that lied on their applications. How on earth do you verify when an illegal alien ran the border without being able to do a field investigation? You can't even be certain of the country of citizenship, let alone the person's name. But we hear this on TV all the time. Oh, how wonderful. If they've been living here for, you know, how will you know? Everybody will know what the magic year is. So if they say to people, you have to have entered the United States by January 1st, 2010, we'll just pick something out of my ear. Everybody would have gotten here somewhere in 2008 or 2009, I promise you. And everybody will go wink, wink, because everybody will know that it's a big scam, and nobody is going to look for or find the fraud. The approval rate for these DACA applications, folks, is running at something like 97%. 97%. You mean to say that 97% of these applications are completely truthful and honest? And when you look at the findings and recommendations of the 9/11 Commission, talking about how most of the aliens who attacked America, none of the aliens who attacked America really came through the border. Most of them came through airports and gained that lawful admissions process. It's right in the 9/11 Commission report. The 9/11 Commission report, in point of fact, said that to a terrorist, a passport is as important as a weapon. Think about that statement. But these politicians are making this headlong dash to have this massive amnesty program to satisfy the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, to satisfy the special interest groups and the corporations and all the people, the American Immigration Lawyers Association. They're making this charge to satisfy the people that are going to profit off of this. Unless, of course, there's a massive terrorist attack, and then all bets are off. But they're willing to gamble with American lives. They are willing to gamble with American lives. And these politicians know better. And I want you to understand. Listen to what Chairman Bob Goodlatte over at the House Judiciary Committee had to say about those 15 people, those DACA individuals. Listen to this. This is Bob Goodlatte. This is the article that was published yesterday, initially by Associated Press, but Yahoo News picked it up and put it up on the web. This is Bob Goodlatte's words. With few fraud detection measures and effective background checks in place, it's no surprise that ICE arrested over a dozen DACA recipients last week, most of whom had already been convicted of a crime, said House Judiciary Committee Chairman Bob Goodlatte. Quote, I and other members of the House Judiciary Committee have expressed concern about this for years. Yes, you have, Bob, but here's the problem. Why have you not made this an issue as a prerequisite for any kind of a conversation about any comprehensive immigration reform program? Why do we keep hearing about the Mexican border? Why aren't we hearing about that? Bob Goodlatte had a hearing a year ago this past December because they had found out that members of the Mexican drug cartels had been granted political asylum. Granted political asylum. But they then talked about how this put a burden on the border. See, because we can't talk about how this impacts the rest of America. Because once you do that, people are going to say you can't do this program because you're going to get people killed. The Republicans made the primary argument against comprehensive immigration reform, incredibly, the primary argument was that it undermines the rule of law and it undermines the Constitution. How many people care about that? Let's be very blunt and honest and open with each other. How many Americans care about the rule of law? How many Americans fudge on their tax returns, cheated on their high school math final, and have a radar detector on their dashboard? Do you think those people give a damn about the rule of law? Really? Honest? No. Many people don't care. The argument that would have been the slam dunk would have been, and it would not have been an overreach, would not have been an overreach to say, listen, this program, comprehensive reform that this president wants, the way he's doing things, undermines national security. But remember, Boehner said the president wants to go it alone, and we want to work with him to create this program. Well, nobody in their right mind would be accepting of such a program if they had used the right argument. And what was the right argument? This program will undermine irrevocably America's national security. Case closed. Take your marbles. Go home. The party is over. They couldn't do that. They couldn't do that. So what did they do? They went after the relatively weak argument, the argument that says, oh, this goes against the rule of law. How naughty is that? The rule of law, you know, we it's not nice. They shouldn't go after the rule of law, but that's what they went and did. It's all about the rule of law. The average American could care less about that. Again, it was the wrong argument, but not really, because you have to understand that the objective wasn't to blow up this whole idea, but to find a way to criticize the president, but make certain that down the road they could still enact this legislative garbage. It's both parties, folks. It's both parties. And then you understand what this is really about, too. Because then we come to an article that talked about how what's really happening now is lowering the wages of American high-tech workers. See, illegal aliens, oh, they do the work Americans won't do, which is a lie. But it's not just about illegal aliens, and most people don't get it. So here's a headline. This is the San Diego Reader, which is a subsidiary of the San Diego newspaper. And so here's this article. This was published March 11th, just a couple days ago, 2 days ago. And it's called "A Scheme to Lower Engineers' Wages. Congress will shortly be taking up a bill that is based on a blatant lie." This is the words now from this article. "It won't be the first time that this has happened. During a period in which both political parties bemoan declining middle-class incomes, Congress will consider legislation introduced on January 13th that will hammer the middle class economically. The bill, called the Immigration Innovation I-Squared Act of 2015, would permit American corporations to bring in more foreign workers for 3 to 6 year stints in low to moderate pay science, technology, engineering, and mathematics professions, the so-called STEM professions. They would get in through the H-1B program. I-Squared was part of last year's comprehensive immigration reform bill that did not get through both houses of Congress. This is why Gates and Zuckerberg pumped over $1.5 billion into pushing comprehensive reform. They didn't care about farm workers and roofers. They want to bring in hundreds of thousands of programmers and engineers so they can fire Americans and lower the wages. And you know, if you go in front of a bunch of people, and I do a lot of public speaking, and if any of you find opportunities for such, let me know. Happy to do it. If you say to people in an audience, how many here want wage equality, everyone's going to jump up and start cheering. I bet you 90% of the people in that audience, it'll be like throwing raw meat to a hungry lion. Yeah, I want that income equality. What people aren't asking is, whom will we be made more equal to? Alan Greenspan talked about wage equality. And do you know what wage equality means to Alan Greenspan? Lowering the wage premium paid to what he called the privileged elite. The privileged elite. Do you know who he was referring to? Middle-class, high-tech workers, highly skilled workers. And he said, because we shield American high-skilled workers from world competition, we are paying them more money than we should, and if we could start to remove the shield by bringing in lots more high-tech workers, then we could greatly reduce wage inequality between Americans with skills and Americans without skills. You know what Alan Greenspan was really saying, folks? That if we could bring in all those H-1B visas that Ted Cruz, by the way, wants to bring in 325,000, this isn't about left or right, but about right or wrong, but that if we could flood the market with foreign workers, we could narrow the gap in wages between America's middle-class workers and the working poor. so that a guy with a master's degree, let's say in engineering or computer programming, would only make a little bit more than somebody who dropped out of high school and is washing dishes in the back of a greasy spoon diner. That's his dream. And so when you hear politicians, I want you to think about it. When you hear this nonsense, oh, you know, we have to raise the minimum wage. We need wage equality. Wage equality. Even if you paid somebody $15 an hour, and I wrote an article about this for Progressives for Immigration Reform, even if you paid someone $15 an hour, do the math. You're talking about $32,000 a year. Can you live on $32,000? How do they tell us that the poverty line is somewhere like $26,000 a year, some ridiculous figure? How can they tell us that unemployment is at 5.5% without counting tens of millions of unemployed Americans of working age? It's lie after lie after lie after lie. It's almost as though Pravda and Izvestia, the old communist news organizations, have set up shop in Washington for our government. Do you really think that $32,000 a year is wage equality? Well, actually, it comes close to it, and I'll tell you why. Because if Mr. Greenspan and Chuck Schumer and Ted Cruz and Gates and Zuckerberg had their way, that's roughly what a computer programmer would earn also. Think about that. Think about that. This is about destroying the middle class under the guise of being equal. Hey, what are you complaining about? You're not making out any worse than that guy down the road who washes dishes. Really? So where is the incentive? And then you have the president offering a free associate's degree to kids who are desperate for a bright future. And when he's out of office in 2 years, Obama, thank God, finally, and those kids come out of school with their degrees, where do you think they're going to go? Nowhere. Nowhere. This is about providing a promise for something that will be meaningless. This is snake oil. This is garbage. This is trash. Offering kids who are willing to work for it a free education, and everybody knows that with that 2-year degree, they can go and work at Burger King or McDonald's. This is what it's about, folks. This is what wage equality means. This is why they're pushing comprehensive reform. There's nothing about justice here. There's nothing about what's good for America here. And we are looting our own economy in the process. Last year, between $125 and $200 billion got wired out of our economy. Do you know globally which country gets the lion's share of the remittances being wired out of the United States? India. Not just in the United States, but from other countries. It's India. Last year, India received somewhere between $60 and $70 billion. So when that kind of money moves out of our economy, I want you to think about what happens to the money. An American who earns a good paycheck goes out and buys a new car. An American who earns a good paycheck maybe buys a house, buys a couple of suits of clothing. This puts other people to work. A foreign worker makes the money. What do? They go to the bank, they go to the post office, they go to Western Union, and they wire the money out of the country. And the banks are happy with this because banks are like moving companies. If you called up Allied Van Lines or whomever, one of the moving companies, and said to them, I want to move from New York to Chicago. Okay, how many pieces of furniture? Are we moving from a private house to an apartment house? Is there an elevator? They take down some information, and they tell you how much it's going to cost to move your furniture. They don't care if it's French provincial. They don't care if it's Scandinavian. They don't care if it's colonial. All they care is how many pieces, how far. Banks don't care how the money was accumulated in the first place. They don't care if the person was a surgeon who operated on a child and saved his or her life, or if the money was earned by a prostitute working in a massage parlor, or if the money was the result of a drug deal. They're just happy to move the money. If we move the money, we get a piece of the action. They become the silent partner to legitimate and criminal enterprises. And that's who the bankers are. Okay? You know, I love bankers. Did you ever try to call up the bank and say, hey, listen, you own half of my house, so I'd like you to mow your half of the lawn or paint your half of the living room or replace half of the carpeting in the dining room? Really? It's a joke. It's a joke. The banks are thrilled. Everybody is thrilled because the money that's getting drained out of our economy helps people who are greedy along the way. But America winds up with a bigger debt. American workers wind up with lower wages, maybe wind up without a job, wind up losing their homes to foreclosure. But who cares? Who cares? Because the people that are making the money continue to make more money. But what's happening along the way is that our country is being looted, and American families are losing their thin grasp on the middle class. That's why this article is important, and that's how this all fits together. This is about opening up our borders for more students to make the universities happy. In fact, Senator David Vitter, who's running for governor, and I certainly want him to be successful, but there's a part of me that would hate for him to become governor because we really need his voice of clarity and reason in the Senate, is trying to get a bill passed that would prevent Iranians from studying nuclear engineering in the United States. For all the talk about nuclear proliferation, do you know that the top 10 countries that send us their students are from Saudi Arabia and China? We are training people in the high-tech fields that could ultimately be used by our enemies. Siddiqui, the woman who tried to kill the soldiers, got her PhD at Brandeis University. We are educating our enemies. But the schools don't care because they're getting their tuitions. We have over 1 million foreign students in the United States. Fraud runs rampantly through the whole program, but nobody seems to care about any of this as long as they're getting their money, and the hell with America and the hell with Americans. This is all anti-American. If you believe that Bill Gates is a philanthropist and you believe that the guy that puts cheese on a mousetrap is trying to feed hungry mice, these are not philanthropists, and they're not people looking to build up America. They're looking to build up their bank accounts. And we all know that Bill Gates and Mr. Zuckerberg, a guy who's so delusional that Lewis Black made a point, and I'll take Lewis at his word, said that Zuckerberg had actually said that Facebook was as important to civilization today as the Gutenberg printing press was to civilization back when the press was invented. The guy is delusional. These are megalomaniacs. These are sick people. But because of the money that they have, it gives them the power that they wield. And most politicians don't give a damn about morality. They just care about winning the next election, which means they have to get more money. Most politicians wake up in the morning with as much of a motivation to get their hands on more money as a woman who's working in a brothel because she's addicted to crack and needs money for her next fix. This is where the political game is being played. They say that Obama spent $800 million, according to a report that was out there that done about the banks on a network that did a series called Greed. And they reported that he spent over $800 million on getting reelected. It's been claimed that Hillary is trying to amass a war chest of over $1 billion, over $1 billion. But what difference does it make, right? It's really important, folks, that we get involved with our government. It's important that we make them accountable. You know, it's remarkable because when you go to the ICE website, and I call those days when I do that dumpster diving because you find a lot of garbage. Same report, one covered by a newspaper, one covered by ICE. This is really remarkable because you had this article that said, this was published, let's see, when was this published? March 10th, just a couple days ago. High-level member of $5 million ATM skimming scheme convicted on multiple charges. And it starts out saying a Chicago man. Chicago man, okay? And so that was kind of interesting. And they talked about how they did this major investigation, and the guy's name was Dino Horvat. Dino Horvat, Chicago man. Okay. When you go to another newspaper, this one called the Cliff View Pilot, I believe it's a New Jersey paper, they tell you in the article that the people that were rounded up were from Romania. Now, you would think that an organization that has as its first word immigration would think it important enough to make note of the fact that the people they arrested were here from Romania. By the way, if they were from Romania, I don't think they ran the Mexican border either. So think about that. Immigration and Customs Enforcement describes a gang of Romanians as simply being people from Chicago. Because God forbid they should tell you the truth that these people shouldn't even have been in the United States. In fact, their ringleader had to be extradited from Sweden, according to the newspaper article. But no, you're not going to hear that. Because then people are going to say, who the hell are we letting into the United States? It goes against the narrative of showing these little children. You know, I did a debate at a university out on Long Island last year. And we had this professor show all these faces and say, oh, these are the faces of the children. It was kind of remarkable. The opening segment was supposed to be 10 to 12 minutes each where we told the audience who we were and whether we were for or against comprehensive reform. Everybody adhered to the rules except this young lady, who was a professor from Peru, who decided she would go on for 40 minutes, 40 minutes, supposed to be 10 to 12 minutes, 40 minutes, a little over, and with a PowerPoint. And one of the illustrations, and she kept coming back to this picture. These are the faces of children. And you saw these kids. They looked kind of dirty, not fresh scrubbed. They were wearing tattered clothing. These are the faces of the immigrants. So when I got up to speak, I asked her if she could tell me the names of the children. And she said, how would I know their names? I said, and how do you know what country they're from? As far as I'm concerned, they look like they came from the Bronx. She was very upset with me. So be it. But there is a narrative. Everybody who's coming here is desperate, is someone that needs our help, okay? And you know, we're on a lifeboat. We have Americans who need help. How is it not compassionate to worry about Americans losing their homes to foreclosure, becoming homeless, maybe losing custody of their own children? We're not supposed to be compassionate for our fellow Americans? We don't care about Americans anymore? Really? I feel bad about poverty anywhere in the world, but literally and figuratively, we should be looking at where it hits home, here in the United States. Here in the United States. What in the world are we, chopped liver, that we're not compassionate? If you look at what has happened to American minority wages, and you look at the poverty and the crime and the violence, you know, it's just so remarkable. They pass laws, gun laws. Why? Well, there's violence, so we've got to do something about the guns. And you have idiots out there like Barbara Boxer, Babs, the woman who didn't want to be called ma'am. You know, I really believe we ought to start calling all of our elected representatives by their first name to remind them that they're our employees. And most of them are being insubordinate, I don't mind telling you. And I don't know where you worked, but where I worked, insubordination would get you fired. But she was, I believe, the one, or maybe it was Feinstein, who said, oh, you know, if we get rid of those big magazines, and once they're used up, they'll be off the street. I guess she trades her car in when the gas tank goes empty. I mean, we have people legislating gun laws that don't know anything about a gun, that probably never fired a gun. Now, remember, I'm registered as a Democrat. I'm a supporter of the Second Amendment. I may disagree with some of my more conservative friends on some of the gun issues. But I certainly carry a firearm. I'm a strong believer in the Second Amendment. But if you're going to pass gun laws, shouldn't you know something about guns? And if you're that concerned about violence, do you really think that drug dealers, crazy people, terrorists, and bank robbers are counting how many bullets they're putting into that illegal gun that they can't have legally anyway? If you want to go after the violence, go after the drugs, go after the gangs. We have more gang members in America today than sworn police officers. That's how you go after the violence. That's how you go after the violence. Nonsense of, well, you can only have 7 rounds and you can... I mean, give me a break. I guarantee you that crazy people, bank robbers and terrorists, aren't counting their bullets. It's the silliest thing I've ever heard. And it's about creating laws that don't do anything to address the problem that supposedly they wanted to address in the first place. But the reason this is happening, ladies and gentlemen, is because most Americans are sitting out the dance. Most Americans don't vote. Forget about calling up their congressman. These are the same Americans who will sit online for 3 days because they're coming out with a new iPhone. These are the same Americans that get so fired up at a football game that when it's 5 below 0, they'll rip their shirts off and they will decorate their hairy chest with body paint because go team, go, but what happened to Team America? What happened to the American family that can't support itself? What happened to American kids whose expectations of success have been greatly reduced from that of their parents' generation? Why aren't we motivated to think about all these issues instead of who the hell is going to win some damn ball game? It's a game. My favorite oxymoron is heroic play. How the hell can you be heroic when you're playing? My parents told me that I would teach people how they should treat me by demonstrating what I was willing to accept. Americans have convinced the members of the United States Congress, both parties, both houses. Americans have convinced people running for the presidency, for governorships, for mayoralties, that we will accept anything and everything they throw at us and shrug our shoulders and say, oh, well, what can you do? Tell you what you can do. You can make those bums accountable. We can make them accountable, but I can't do it by myself. And when people say I'm only one person, I want you to think about something. If you think about major wars, major events in history, it's only a handful of names that really come to mind. If I mention Neil Armstrong, immediately you'll know, oh yeah, first guy to walk on the moon. Did he go to the moon by himself? Besides the fact that Buzz Aldrin accompanied him to the lunar surface and Mike Collins stayed in orbit around the moon, think of the thousands upon thousands of scientists, engineers, technicians, all those people who made that rocket and that launch possible, the mathematicians, the physicists, the chemists, the metallurgists. They all played a role. If they sat out the dance, that rocket wouldn't have gotten off the pad. There would have been no rocket. When you go to the park and you see those statues, they're commemorating the actions of one person who, in a moment of history, took some action that made all the difference. When you think of the American Revolution, there were lots of people who fought and died, but a handful of names come to mind. Thomas Jefferson, John Quincy Adams, Benjamin Franklin. It's a handful. It's only a few people who write history, the people that are willing to stand up and make the difference. The question is, are you willing to stand up to make the difference? Are you willing? You know, we really are at crossroads. America is in a tough situation. The outcome is uncertain. But I will tell you what will make it certain is if we do nothing, we will lose. And I don't even want to imagine what the world will become. I don't want to imagine what the world will become. We have an obligation to ourselves and to our children and to their children. And I will tell you, I do not believe that you can be a good parent if you're not involved in politics. Good parents are very careful about how they raise their children. Good mothers get prenatal care, stop smoking cigarettes if they were dumb enough to be smoking in the first place. They stop drinking alcoholic beverages. They might even stop having caffeine in their coffee and so forth. They're careful about their health. They take the vitamins. They go for routine checkups. They do everything they can because the goal is to have a healthy baby with a bright future. And then when the child is born, you try to go to the best hospitals. And so many parents put so much effort into fixing up the baby's room so it's warm and nurturing. And maybe they put lots of color into the room so that the child will look at the various things and learn to focus their eyes. And there's so many things people do, and they read all the books. Look, I'm a parent. I have four kids, and I'm very proud of all of my kids. I even have a granddaughter now, and I'm certainly excited about that. But good parents do all that for their children, and then they make sure they go to a good school and that they do their homework and that they eat properly and that they go to bed, clean. And we do everything we can for our children. It's all about our children. But if the government fails to keep us safe, their number one obligation, if the government fails to provide the opportunities for Americans to be shielded from unfair foreign workers, if all of this starts to fall apart, what future were these children that we brought into the world and nurtured and cared for and educated so carefully and watched out for, careful who they played with, who they didn't play with? What difference would that make if, God forbid, the world disintegrates? I'll go back and say it again. We can't be good parents if we're not involved in the political process to keep those wackaloons and crooks and miscreants in check. Now, there are some good people down there in Washington. There are. Senator Jeff Sessions, Chuck Grassley, I mentioned David Vitter, my good friend Lou Barletta, Steve King. They're trying hard. By the way, I'm mentioning all conservatives. I don't care about left or right. It's about right or wrong. Louie Gohmert, another real good guy. I'd love to see Jeff Sessions run for president. But the point of the matter is that there are so many truly evil people who don't give a damn about America or their fellow Americans. And they need to hear from us. They're being insubordinate. They are putting our country and our citizens at risk because of their greed. And who is going to stand up to them if not us? We, the people. We have an obligation. We absolutely have an obligation. I'm really glad you were able to join me this evening, March the 13th, Friday the 13th. At least we got through the day almost. I hope you got through it okay. Please go to the websites I've been talking about. They really do good work, and if you want to help these organizations out, then absolutely go for it. We have got to get the truth out because increasingly the truth is a commodity that's hard to come by, very hard to come by. Please go to CAPSWeb, C-A-P-S, CAPSWeb, Californians for Population Stabilization. I know that if you're not living in California, you're probably thinking, oh, well, California, I don't live there. Why should I care? You know, what's happening in California is happening across the country. And the information that's on their website applies to all 50 states. Again, we're not just four border states. We're a nation of 50 border states. They have some great writers, great articles. They're really making a huge effort. It's a small organization making a huge effort to get things fixed. Their articles are enlightening. And that's really what's important also, by the way, folks. If you're going to call up your politicians, they're going to try to bamboozle you with their nonsense. A fundamental question you should ask your politicians when they start talking about immigration, ask them just one question and watch them dissolve. It's kind of fun watching it happen. I mean, it's entertaining. Really, it is. Ask them, how will your proposed comprehensive immigration reform, how does that square with the 9/11 Commission findings and recommendations? I guarantee you they will change subject, and don't let them. When they start to say we can't deport 11 million, tell them you're not answering my question. I worry about another terrorist attack. I worry about people being beheaded in our own country. How will you make certain that the terrorists don't get here and game that process that the 9/11 Commission warned us about? One other point. I should make this before I end my program this evening. This argument that we can't deport 11 million people is a worthless argument. There are many more people in the United States who have driver's licenses and cell phones. I don't think anybody would argue. Nobody ever says there are too many people with driver's licenses and cell phones to stop people from texting and driving. The commercials are amazing. The effort is amazing. They have everybody convinced that if you're behind the wheel and you so much as reach for the phone, a SWAT team will descend on your car. Is it likely to happen? Probably not. But this is what deterrence is about. Chuck Schumer had the chutzpah about 3 months ago. Not that he went before cameras. I mean, it's a rare day when he doesn't. But Chucky Boy started ranting and raving about people who had trespassed on the Brooklyn Bridge, the Manhattan Bridge, the World Trade Center, did a jump off there, a base jump, as it's called, meaning that they parachuted off the roof. But he said the reason they're doing it is because the punishments aren't great enough to deter people from trespassing. He said it's only a one-year maximum penalty, which means they get less than 3 months, so no one is being dissuaded from trespassing. And Schumer proposed that anybody who trespasses on the bridges or any of the landmarks in New York should be looking at 5 years in jail. Mayor Bloomberg, before the guy we have now, de Blasio, said something similar, that people that trespass in the housing projects needed to be arrested and prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law. They understand. If people violate the law, the solution isn't to give people what they broke the law in the first place for, but to make them go to jail and pay a steep price for violating the law. That's how you deter, and they've made it abundantly clear in their press conferences. When people run the border, folks, they're trespassing on America. We spend over $3.3 billion a year inspecting arriving cargo and passengers to try to keep out aliens who are suffering from dangerous communicable diseases, mental illness, convicted felons, fugitives from justice, war criminals, spies, and terrorists, and aliens who would likely become a public charge or would work, if they were to work, would displace American workers or at the least drive down wages. That's in the law. That's who we're trying to keep out. It has nothing to do with race or religion. So when they come in uninspected, they are trespassing. So what Schumer said we should be doing with people who trespass on Brooklyn and New York landmarks is what we should be doing with people who trespass on America, not give them a path to citizenship. The disconnect is mind-boggling. So if you go to your elected representative, he says, we can't deport them all, you say, great. What percentage of people who speed get caught? What percentage of people who blow red lights get caught? The answer is there's a small percentage that get caught. But nobody would recommend no longer enforcing those laws. These are false arguments. Ask them about the 9/11 Commission. Ask them about that. But anyway, I just wanted to get that out there before I end the program because I didn't want to go off the air and think, gee whiz, there was something that I needed to tell my audience. And I do appreciate that you are my audience and that you're here visiting with me because, again, the whole point of what I'm doing is to try to wake up enough of our fellow Americans to change the dynamics of what's going on in Washington, in state capitals, and in city halls across America. So please go to capsweb.org. Front Page Magazine, great publication. David Horowitz does amazing work. I'm proud to be a columnist for them. Progressives for Immigration Reform, another great group. The Social Contract. Check out my article in the Daily Caller. But please, folks, I'm counting on you to get involved. I really am. I can't do this alone. You know, but remember that every blizzard starts with that first snowflake. Every flood starts with that first raindrop. We all need to work together to turn around the direction that this country is headed because right now the direction is the wrong one, let me tell you. And let's celebrate our differences as Americans. And let's look at our neighbors who we disagree with not as our adversaries but as our allies who simply need to be won over by a calm, fact-based debate and discussion. Let's go back to the good old days of Americans sticking together to fight for a common cause, a bright future for ourselves, for our families, for our children. Remember, ladies and gentlemen, democracy is not a spectator sport. I thank you so much for joining me. Again, it's always great to join you at the end of the week, and I look forward to getting together with you again next week right here on the Michael Cutler Hour. Have a great weekend, everybody. Good night.